I'm going to invite Ginger Broyles to come up and give her reflections.
Good morning. Is that on? No?
Should be.
Okay. I have written a response to Dave's sermon that I am going to read to you, and then in a few moments I will explain why I'm reading it. To me, the real question put before us in this series is how are these women faithful people we would want to emulate in some way? God highlights each of them in the lineage of Jesus, and when we first heard their stories, it seems like he has different standards for choosing than we might. Why is Bathsheba's story worth a closer look? Because at first pass, it could seem that she is not more than a steamy seductress who enticed a king with her feminine wiles in a rooftop tub. Many early Bible scholars and a fair number of current ones hint that Bathsheba wasn't totally innocent. Even the scripture seems pretty indifferent to her. She's referred to as Uriah's wife and later as David's wife. In 2 Samuel, she is called by name only once. Otherwise, she's just Mrs. Uriah the Hittite. And she doesn't speak except three words: I am pregnant. We are left to guess what her feelings are. Loss, restoration, and redemption are some themes I see in this story. Bathsheba lost her modesty when she was seen in a most vulnerable situation. 2 Samuel 11 says, one evening David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. The king couldn't sleep. This doesn't seem like a case of exhibitionism or a nighttime skinny dip. And it wasn't nude sunbathing in the afternoon. I think that public nudity was even against the law at that time. Bathsheba lost her voice. David wasn't just an authority figure, he was the king. And there would have been an inherent power differential between a king and one of his female subjects. And this king was invested not only with political power, but also with spiritual power. That difference was evident from an interchange between them at the end of his life. Bathsheba was again summoned into David's presence and bowed to him, calling him my lord the king. Later in her last appearance before David, again she bowed with her face to the ground and said, may my lord King David live forever. By this time she had been his wife for many years. And if we see this sort of differential after years of intimacy, how must she have felt when David's men took her before him in the middle of the night that first time? Just because the scripture doesn't tell us she said anything doesn't mean that she didn't have something to say. She was the wife of a mighty man and the daughter of a mighty man. Matthew names her as the daughter of a member of the elite warrior group called the 30. But she was also the granddaughter of a shrewd military and political counselor and the wife of Uriah, who was also one of the 30 and a high-ranking professional soldier. She wasn't unused to being around men in power. Bathsheba was powerless in this situation. Have you ever been there? We're not always in a position to speak out either. Sometimes we don't get the chance, and sometimes speaking out is more costly than our silence. Bathsheba also lost her ability to hide. She conceived a child with a man she was not yet married to. She lost her husband when David had him killed, and she lost her child when God allowed him to die because of David's sin. I don't profess to know what she was thinking or feeling, and scripture sheds not much light on it, but I know how I would feel if even one of those things happened to me. I would want the earth to swallow me whole, or a very large mountain to fall on me. One of the things that stands out to me about Bathsheba is that she wasn't a quitter. She didn't lie down and die in the midst of a series of events that had the power to cause her untold amounts of pain, shame, and embarrassment. In preparing for this, it hit me one night that even her name seems to link her forever to this, Bathsheba, forever the woman caught in the act of bathing. But there is a larger story, because not only David saw Bathsheba that night, God saw her too. And he doesn't look at her as that woman, forever linked to David in his great sin in a moment of wandering eyes. Matthew includes her in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. Bathsheba's is a story of restoration. David was able to comfort her in her pain, and God comforted her with another baby born to her and a man she was now married to. And from that came the wisest man of his time, and perhaps of all time, Solomon, the wise man who built God a temple that even his father David couldn't build. Some say it was years between the time that the first child died and Solomon's birth, so there was time for healing in the relationship between David and Bathsheba. It is thought that she became not just another in a long string of wives, but his favorite wife. God restored Bathsheba's voice. In a palace coup, 1 Kings records that Bathsheba and her advisor Nathan secured the throne for Solomon, even though there was an older, more popular brother who was expected to succeed David. But this time Bathsheba wasn't going to give in without a struggle. Solomon took the throne, honored his mother, and was advised by her. God redeems the way Bathsheba is remembered. She isn't listed in the genealogy of Christ as the wife of King David, but instead as the wife of Uriah the Hittite. And not because it was too embarrassing to remember the woman involved in David's sin of adultery. The choice she made was to be the wife of Uriah. David messed that up, not Bathsheba. The rest of the women had their past included in their narrative, but in the end, God makes sure we remember Bathsheba for who she was. He restores her original narrative to her name, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. And one is added, queen. You know, at any point, Bathsheba could have let her circumstances be the end of her own personal story, as well as the greater faith story in which she has a part, but she didn't. She persevered and felt the pain as well as lived in and through the chaos. Each of us has a defining moment like that as well, or we will. A time when something horribly painful happens to us against our will, or when we do something horrible to someone else. When we just blow it in our sin and selfishness. We could let those traumatic experiences be the end of our story too. But we can learn from Bathsheba and not let our faith stories stop there, to not allow hard things to separate us from the unstoppable love of God. There are two more themes I see to their story, exposure and hiding. David sees Bathsheba. David tries to cover up the tracks his sin left behind. God sees Bathsheba and sees David too for that matter. Joan Chittister, a Benedictine nun and author of 25 books, returns often to the themes of personal failure and struggle. She suggests that one mistake we make is to accept perfection as our standard or goal. When we imagine that we will never fail, failure hits hardest. Perfection is an oppressive standard, and no Christian this side of heaven will ever reach it. The problem, of course, is that we fail. We know ourselves to be weak. We stumble along, being less than we can be, never living up to our own standards, let alone someone else's. David's adultery and de facto murder, she says, were regrettable, but they were not remarkable. Such imperfections are our common lot. The perennial temptation at this point, given the insecurities provoked by both admission of failure and realization of a darker impulse that gave rise to them in the first place, is to deny, rationalize, or to engage in a personal makeover. This is a natural and understandable reaction, but it gets us nowhere. Sorry, I lost my place here. Every person longs to be loved and accepted for just who they are and where they are, and that is precisely what God offers us. Frederick Buechner writes that it is often just what we fear more than anything else. Little by little, we come to accept instead the highly edited version which we put forth in hope that the world will find it more acceptable than the real thing. True saints, he says, are those who realize, like David and Bathsheba, just how unsaintly they can be both in action and disposition, and who do not try to pretend otherwise or put on appearances to mask reality, either to themselves or to others. When Date asked me to be one of the responders, I wasn't excited about it because I'm not a public speaker, but I was willing. And somewhere, even in the process of thinking about it, I sensed God redeeming some of my story. It wasn't until we embarked on this sermon series that I realized I have always looked at myself through a really harsh lens, not unlike how I remembered Bathsheba. I've viewed myself the same way, through a lens which makes it easier to remember all the things I've done wrong, the times I went along instead of speaking up, and hated myself for where the consequences have taken me and how they have shaped me. And during that first sermon, an awareness dawned on me that I don't think other people look at me that way. And in fact, those old sins and that harsh lens don't define who I even am anymore. It is the past. There was grace, restoration, and redemption for Bathsheba, and that same grace is there for me and for you. So the reason I chose to read what I wrote rather than just speak freely is because I am a writer, or I started out to be one over 20 years ago. I was a feature reporter for a newspaper, and the reason I loved it was because I got the chance to discover and share people's stories and uncover things about them that you otherwise would never have known about them. This writer part of me is something that I've hidden from. In doing so, I have not only shrouded a part of the way God created me, I actually forgot about that part. Buried it because I was too afraid that I was giving people the power to reject me and what I put out there, to reject me. And that felt way too vulnerable, too exposed. As I was in the process of writing this, my own story actually came back to me. The cool and sometimes tricky thing about God's economy is that even if you bury something, he doesn't quit seeing it. And he tends to do something remarkable with those pieces we think are dead and buried. He takes the shards and brings them up green, and they come into bloom. Part of the truth of David and Bathsheba's story, as well as yours and mine, is that God sees us, whether we hide or not. Let us each give God time to redeem our stories, because in the end, the thing that you regret, or that thing that was regrettably done to you, or the thing you try to hide from, may not be the end of your story, and it may even be the beginning of a larger story that God has for you.
Thanks, Ginger. For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you.